Hi, this is Jenny Nash, founder and CEO of Author Accelerator. During the pandemic, there was an explosion of people who wanted to write memoir, and many of those writers are now struggling to make sense of their drafts and figure out how to approach the marketplace. It's a great time to be a book coach who specializes in memoir, and in March 2024, Author Accelerator is launching a certification course to give memoir coaches the skills, tools, and experience to meet writers where they are. Our year-long program is robust and intense. I'm inviting any listeners of this show who are interested in our coaching program to sign up for a one-on-one session with me to strategize about whether or not this course is right for you. Just go to bookcoaches.com/amwriting to sign up for a time that works for you. That's bookcoaches.com/amwriting. I look forward to chatting with you.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is #AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about getting the work done, and I'm just thinking to myself, since I don't do the intro every week, I wonder what other people say. I've been meaning to give a listen to some of your recent episodes, kids, so I will have to do that, so I know what you say. Anyway, carry on. Who's with me today?
Hello, hello. I am here today. I'm Jenny Nash. I'm the founder and CEO of Author Accelerator, the author of 12 books in 3 genres, and the newest co-host of the #AmWriting podcast.
And I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of various contemporary romance and suspense books, including The 5-Year Lie, which is coming out in May. And KJ, you wrote me an intro, so every time I do an episode, I just read exactly what you wrote me. It's not that mysterious.
Oh, good for me. I'm so clever. And I have listened. I just haven't. I think of it as listening to a whole different podcast. I think, oh, I'm such a genius. I've created a podcast I want to listen to by releasing this to Jenny and Serena and Jess. So it's awesome. All right. Well, I'm KJ Delantonia. I am the author of 3 novels, the most recent of which is Playing the Witch Card, which you should go and buy if you haven't. And I know not all of you have, so go right now. Just turn this off. Go buy my book. No, but it's fun. Anyway, and also the nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent, and also the former editor and lead writer of The Motherlode at the New York Times. So, you know, I feel like I've lived many a writery life at this point.
You have.
Dude, word.
You have.
So, I've gathered you here today to talk about this very important subject, which is, well, I'm calling it why we should take a plot walk, because that is what Serena and I do sometimes. But the real meat of this is that I wanted to dig into why we should be talking our plots over with someone before we take the time to turn them into an 80,000 word document. And Jenny and I have obviously talked about that in depth if you go back to the summer series about planning. But I feel like I personally kind of keep needing to hear that, because it is so much easier to hide your plot all tucked away in your head where it sounds really glorious and you're convinced that it will work than it is to bust it out and tell someone about it. So let's talk about breaking through that barrier and why we should do it.
Can you explain what a plot walk is? I'm so jealous. I see you guys put hats on and you go out in the cold. What's a plot walk?
Okay, so a plot walk requires that you live in the middle of nowhere, which we've got that covered, and that you have spikes you can put on your shoes in the winter, because not even ice will stop us. I mean, we could, of course, go sit in a coffee shop, but there's only so much sitting around in coffee shops a girl can do during a week. So we go on these walks, and it's great exercise. So, and the dog likes it. We start up this hill and pretty much huffing and puffing right away. And the other day I made a little post on Instagram after one of our walks where we did not discuss plot. And I said, hey, Writing tip of the week. If you're stuck on your book, go for a walk. You'll still be stuck, but at least you'll have gone for a walk. Follow me for more productivity tips. And then 2 days later, we went on another walk and we talked about my plot all the way up the hill. And we talked about KJ's all the way down.
And we have done it before.
Yes, we have. Like, it's totally fair game to get like 20 paces into this walk and be like, so I got this problem. So first of all comes the part where you're actually explaining what the problem is. So when we did this the other day with KJ, she starts telling me the plot. And a lot of it is review because I've heard a lot about this plot before. But she stops after 30 seconds and goes, oh my God, it's so complicated. I can't even explain it. And yeah, hello. That was like the first big light bulb moment of the plot walk, right? Like, she realized in trying to explain what was going on in her plot that maybe there were just a couple too many things going on. So then your helpful friend, in that case, I will play the part of the helpful friend, starts asking questions like, well, why do you need that thing? Why do you need that thing about the dad? Why do you need that thing about the thing? And then you have to answer these questions. And sometimes it's possible to go, oh, wait, I don't.
So I happen to know a thing about KJ, which is that she tends to like complicated. She likes complicated plots and complicated scenes. And she likes the tightly wound up, you know, layered, interesting knots of a story. So do you like them, KJ? Like you were saying, when they're in your head, because they seem so logical and whole and polished. And then as soon as you say them, that they're not, or do you, like, I'm trying to get at, what's the transfer from your head into words?
Well, the my personal part of this is, yes, I tend to overcomplicate. Jenny can be the witness to my overcomplicating of even the original draft of The Chicken Sisters, which was half again as long and involved a lot, even more intricate plotting on the parts of the protagonists, not just me. I think I always feel like my characters need 46 reasons to do something. And for me, it's easier to give them plot reasons than it is to give them emotional reasons. So, and I have begun to be able to see this coming, because I certainly did the same thing in Her Boots. I did it less in Playing the Witch Card, because in that book, the emotional plot was the driver. And I think I was more able to follow it. And actually, I kind of had to come out and add some plot stuff. So here I am with a new project. And the idea is that this is going to be a rom-com, and whether it is my next book or not, I cannot tell you at this point, but it's a thing I'm drafting right now. And in a romance, the emotion has to be the driver of the plot. And that was a thing I just really needed to be reminded of. So that was what was going on for me there, is that I was focusing more on the external plot than on the internal plot.
And she needs me around to go, it has to be about the couple. It has to be about the couple. It has to be about the couple. Like, you can't let that thing with the sister, you know, matter too much. So yeah, that's my role in this in this drama, is to say, like, nope, it has to be about the couple.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I feel like on KJ's half of our plot walk, we streamlined, and that felt good. And you know, and I asked, sometimes I'd push back on things like, are you sure you want to do that? Because blah blah blah. She'd be like, nope, it's good, I got it. And it just, when you have to defend yourself, like defending your thesis, it's just really, you know, really handy. And one time I was listening to Becca Syme give a talk about being stuck, and she said, in passing, you know, she was reeling off like all these fabulous ideas for what to do with when you get stuck. And she's like, and if you're a verbal processor, and I thought, I'm a verbal processor. So
I don't think I want to be a verbal processor. You know,
I don't know if you have a choice.
Yeah. I'm really resistant to this process. And it's taken actually doing this with Serena multiple times, in which my plot problem tends to be I have tangled myself up in knots. Her plot problems tend to be more like, okay, I've got these two people on the top of Mount Everest and I've taken away, you know, the Sherpas. Now what? Look, look for me for, you know, more ideas on plotting your novels. But so just the fact that we could talk, really, because when we started doing this, Serena had written way more fiction than I had. So I felt very self-conscious about talking about my people as though they were real, and you were beyond that by that point. So to be able to hear you go, okay, so, you know, he's thrown her over his back and carried her into this burning building, but why would he carry her into the burning building? And then for me to go, well, all right, so maybe there's people outside that are worse than the fire inside, or maybe, I mean, incidentally, also not the actual plot piece we were talking to, but that was really helpful. So I feel like we did it a few times for you before I was like, okay. In fact, I think I made you read something before we did it for me the first time. But now I can just like throw down. But it is hard. I'm like, I don't wanna. I just want it to work my way.
Well, it strikes me that what Serena asked you on this walk, well, it has to be about the couple, is about the genre you're writing in and adhering to that and sticking to that, which is another thing a plot has to do, right? It doesn't have to just work in its own universe. It has to work within a category that book's going to fit in. And so the reason I bring that up is because you, on your walk up the hill, the two of you happen to have two very accomplished writers that you get to bat things off of. Do you worry about people who don't have that? Like, what if you, can you do this with a friend who's not going to be able to say such a genre-specific thing?
That's such a great question, you know, because by now all of us on this podcast have a really well-developed vocabulary for discussing what happens in plots. But I once heard Kristen Higgins give a fun talk about plotting where she said sometimes she just calls her husband into her office and she talks at him for 25 minutes and he's like, but what about? And she's like, no, shh, don't speak. So it's possible to verbal process without, you know, with your dog. But yeah, so some people like this game even without the vocabulary. Like my younger son will play this game with me if we're in the car. And I'm like, hey, okay.
Tell us how that works.
Well, he is very interested in narrative too, but from a completely different place. Like he loves films where people blow shit up. So you can play to your audience a little bit. And I can say to my 18-year-old son, or even I could do this when he was 12, like, I have this idea and here's the setup, but I don't know what happens next. And he liked the game enough to be able to just spitball with me. Not everybody is that person, but you do not have to have all the vocabulary and a grasp of the three-act structure to take a plot walk with somebody.
And a lot of the time, what's important about this for me, I mean, it is great to be able to do it with Serena, but I also have lined up a kid and said, okay, just hold still while I... And it honestly doesn't necessarily even matter what the person says back. What matters is the accountability of having to try to lay it down, because the blobs that we see in our head, when they actually have to have real words in a specific language attached to them, that brings a kind of clarity that blobby head thinking does not.
I have had the experience of going on a plot walk, which I didn't know that's what it was, years and years ago with a friend who was 100% not a writer and had none of the vocabulary or anything. And I wasn't trying to solve something. I was excited and telling her about this book that I was writing. It was The Last Beach Bungalow, about a breast cancer survivor who falls in love with a house and thinks it's going to make her feel safe. And I was sort of going on and on about it. And this very smart friend of mine who was a good listener, asked a question that was so spot on that I had not even thought about. It was a question along the lines of, well, what does that have to do with her having cancer? And I, you know, it was like, it just made me have to rethink the whole thing. And I had made this huge leap of logic in my own head, and she was able to see it. So I like the idea of knowing who you're talking to and what kind of language they can speak and what sort of plot walk this is. Is it a shorthand plot walk, or is it, I'm going to just bounce this off a person who cares about me and is listening?
And sometimes it can just be, I'm going to tell you the plot. You know, I'm going to tell you what my book is about, because that's hard to do at any stage for everyone. So to do it early is often for me to hone in on, okay, what is this about? Like it's like you said, well, what does that have to do with her having cancer? I mean, what does this have to do with them falling in love? Like, what to have to give somebody a couple sentences, somebody who's going to get bored at, like, you know, minute three, is really, right. I think that is also valuable.
Yeah, every time we do this, we're also, whether we recognize it or not, like honing our own pitch for this work. Like, how long did it take me to explain why this is fun? You know, oh, longer than 3 minutes? We got a problem.
I was going to say 3 minutes is very generous.
Right? Yeah, you're right. I think 47 seconds is what they say is the average attention span at the moment. That's how long we spend on an app or something. I have no idea where I got that. But yeah, all right. So you have 47 seconds to tell. And, you know, to some extent, sometimes people ask you what your book is about, and it's fair, it's fine to be like, well, I'd tell you about it, then I'd have to kill you. Just because you don't want to, or you're not ready, or that person will not be respectful. So you don't always have to, but
right.
I feel like at least, you know, early in the process, you should force yourself to tell somebody what this is about so that you can tell yourself what this is about.
So I have a question about the specific plot walk you guys were on in the hill. When you get to the top of the hill, do you consciously say, okay, now it's your turn? Or does that organically happen?
I don't know. I guess I'm sort of conscious of like carrying on a conversation for way too long. Or honestly, actually, if you're truly plotting something, you get to a point of overload where you can't actually like think about it anymore because you've just held all these opposing views of what could be the right decision in your head for minutes. And then you just get kind of like confused. Even if you have solved something, that usually happens.
Yeah. And I wasn't necessarily, we had gone for a walk 2 days prior in which I probably was just as tangled up and I hadn't said anything. But because we started with Serena's plot, then I was like, okay, well, I have a problem too, but it's much less specific.
Well, it's something Jenny said a minute ago, which is you have to be ready. Or actually, KJ said that. But so let's recall also that last year I had an essentially a paid plot walk every week working on my thriller. So I had an editor who we were on Zoom. And we were plotting this thriller every Tuesday at 11 a.m. for an hour and 15 minutes or something like that. But the thing is, it's like, you have to prepare for that. You know, like I had to go in with questions or we were just going to stare at each other on Zoom. So I had to mentally prep for that so hard that sometimes that was the most useful thing about it, depending, you know. There were moments when she gave me these brilliant little insights that I would run off and use, but sometimes it was just that getting ready for it. Like you can sit there and say, I'm stuck and I don't know what to do without making any headway. Or you can say, I'm stuck and I'm having a call tomorrow at 11 a.m. and I better find a way to explain what the heck my problem is or it's going to all be for nothing.
Well, that comes back to the working with a book coach. So when Jenny and I have worked together, it has been the same. You know, we did not work together on playing the witch card. We did on In Her Boots, but then I had to redo it. not because of the, but because there was a new editor. So when I have that, it's been, yeah. When you have that sort of kind of date, it's fantastic.
Well, it's accountability. It's somebody is there that you know is listening and that you know cares, whether that is a critique partner or a friend, or you call your husband in, or you're paying a book coach. It's all the same. It's I'm holding myself accountable, and I'm taking these words out of my head and putting them into the world to see how they land. But I have a question which may not be fair. I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you ever get sick of hearing about your friend's plot? If they take the same question on a plot walk for a year, do you ever get sick of it?
I guess a question for Serena, because hers are always very specific and she writes really fast. I don't think I'd have time to get sick of it. So from my perspective, no.
Well, the reason that I ask it is because I sometimes feel that as a book coach, and I've identified when I feel it, which is when that person doesn't feel like they're actually moving forward. They keep coming up with another reason. Well, what if it's this? Well, what if it's that? Well, what if it could be that? Well, ooh, maybe I'll do that. Where they're not settling, they're into the story, not settling, like compromising, resting, or coming home to the story. I feel them going around and around and around and around. And sometimes because I'm being paid, I can call them out on that and say, I sense that you're going around and around, or that you're avoiding something, or that you're procrastinating, or there's something else behind this. But I feel like in a friendship, that's way harder to do.
Well, maybe, except in fiction, we're all just constantly making choices, and living with your choices is really hard. So if I hope I would be a good enough friend to say, okay, you need to nail down this part or you're going to be here forever and I don't want that for you. So either it's because there's something else wrong with the setup of your book that you can't make this choice, or you are just feeling the pressure of how a choice narrows your options, just like in real life, you know. So let's talk about why you're afraid to make that choice and how can we get you past this?
Man, that's good.
She would really do that too. I'm pretty sure she has said to me, you're doing it again over this overcomplicating thing. And I know, I mean, I happen to know. Yeah, so we have the benefit of living close and having each other. But I guess part of the reason I wanted to have this, to do this episode, is that we have been friends for a really long time. We have not been doing this for very long. So if you don't try, you know, if you don't ever line up somebody and say, could we just, you know, can we have a plot Zoom? Could we have, the plot walk is great because it's kind of like connecting with your teenager. You're not necessarily, you know, you're not sitting there staring at someone over a cup of coffee trying to explain, you know, why the fairies live underneath this tree and not underneath that tree. But you gotta try, you know, you can't form the kind of relationship where you can say that stuff to each other if you don't take that first step and tell somebody your plot. And also, if you don't take that first step and tell somebody your plot, the odds of it being a steaming hot mess are kind of high.
Yeah. I've been infringing on friends for this purpose for a really long time now, and I try to spread it out. Like, I can remember in 2016, this evening, where I'm walking on the treadmill and drinking a glass of wine and telling L. Kennedy the plot of Rookie Move, you know, and I remember so specifically how she fixed me on that call. She was like, okay, so you've got the internal conflict all figured out. Now you've got to let the external world pull them apart. And I was like, oh, I do. That is my problem. And then I went and fixed it. But you can't call the same friend every single time. So, you know, you have to move this stuff around. And I have, like, there's maybe 10 people I've asked to do this. And it also doesn't have to be perfectly matched. Like if you know any other writer friends, the odds that you both have a plot problem on the same Tuesday are, you know, they're not great. But you can say, hey, can we do this as this time, and then I'll owe you. And then, you know, that person comes back and says, hey, can you talk this out with me? And it works. Writers, most of them recognize the utility of this exercise and are willing to give it a shot.
And if you're not wanting to do this, that's probably a bad sign. Like, maybe you like don't know the right person, but if you don't want to tell someone your plot, there's a reason for that, and it is not a good reason. Or at least if you're me, that is my experience. Is if I don't want to explain this, and I don't mean like to your uncle at Thanksgiving, then probably I need to explain it so I can face why I don't want to explain it.
But KJ, you're not talking about I'm afraid someone will steal my idea. That you're not talking about that. You're talking about what is the fear, do you think? I'm afraid
it sucks. I'm afraid I'll sound stupid. I'm afraid I don't know how to explain it. And all of those things are possibly true. At least for me, it doesn't read as fear. It's more like resistance. Like I just like, no, I don't want to. I don't need to do that. That sounds too hard. I won't enjoy that. That will be painful. And, you know, they'll give me dumb ideas that I won't use and then they'll be offended or something like that. I have all kinds of reasons, but, and I don't know, maybe if you just can't get past that, you know, put it into a voice recorder and then try to listen to yourself say it. But oh my goodness, that sounds really painful.
I have actually, sometimes I will go for a walk by myself and I will use Otter, which is a voice recording app. And I will just talk about my plot because I need to nail down what happens next. And I will just explain myself. And usually I don't even need that recording at all. I don't even have to look back at the text, but I only do it because sometimes I find myself reeling off dialogue. Like, okay, and then he says that, and then she says this, and I want to look back as a reference, but you can actually talk out your plot without another human being if you want to.
Wait, this is so cool. You go on a walk, and you put your phone, like, in a pocket near your mouth with the Otter on.
Or you use AirPods.
And that's amazing that you do that. Do you feel self-conscious?
Well, there's nobody around.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is an advantage we have. We can easily walk without seeing anyone.
Yes, between here and where I walk, I might encounter a beaver, but not a human, or a white-tailed deer. So, and I only record myself in case I figure out something with any complexity that I want to remember the order of it, or that I thought of how the dialogue works into that scenario. But if those things don't happen, then I just wouldn't bother looking at it.
Solo plot walk.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Yeah. I did this last summer, or two summers ago, with a short story. Like, I am not good at writing short stories, but I had said that I would, and I knew which character I was going to use, like a little bonus thing for my series. And I'm like, all right, in the next 20 minutes, you know, next 40 minutes, we're going to walk 2 miles up that hill and I'm going to figure out what the heck the short story is about. And I did it.
I love that. I love that. Do you guys think that the walking contributes? Like you talked about not doing this in a coffee shop. I think there is something to the walking. Like KJ said, you're not looking at each other's faces. But do you think the actual moving through space part or exercise part is helpful?
I think it kind of frees my head. I can do the part where you have enforced thinking or talking out loud if I'm alone in the car and I turn the radio off. But I have to be like, okay, between here and New London, I am going to think of, you know, I'm going to figure out the following problem. And then I can listen to my podcast and drive the rest of the way to Boston. Like I have to make it very, so I think it's the having your body do a thing that is so familiar physically that your mind doesn't have to think about it, but your body is occupied. That helps me.
It also gets you away from your laptop. I mean, if I'm by myself and I'm sitting in front of my document and I don't know what happens next, like that's really stressful. But if I'm doing something else and thinking about it, then that is not stressful. Like it's really hard to be stressed out when you're walking through a meadow.
I've been known to take a notebook to a coffee shop and sort of do a similar thing silently. And the result genuinely looks like, wait, what if instead of him being a truck driver, you know, he had a bus and then she could ride the bus and then that would, and it genuinely, and then it's like, no, not a bus, an airplane. Like the words, no, not a bus, an airplane would be written in. And I, similarly to you and your otter, I almost never go back and look at that stuff. Unless, same thing, unless I get going on the dialogue and then I try to switch into something where I can keep it. But I can, you can actually take a picture of that dialogue and Apple has things that will turn your picture into, or Evernote, I think, has a thing that'll turn your picture. I mean, they're not great words, but
they
you know,
both
then,
do, but neither yeah. one works very well.
They're improving all the time. The Evernote one is just, it's steadily getting better and better. So, you know, I mean, that would just be a thing that you could do, but 99% of what goes in that notebook is not worthy of Evernote's attention.
I often think that some of the best writing work is done not sitting at the keyboard and the computer, whether you're driving or you're in the shower, or you're going on a walk or you're doing something else and something pops into your head. It's that idea that writing is not just hands on keyboard in front of a computer screen. It's thinking and processing, and that's what you guys are talking about. And what a lovely thing to do where you're walking up and down a big hill together. It's really cool.
All right, so everybody go and find a hill, solve a plot problem, and then write us, tell us you did it, or, you know, find a friend, or, I don't know, find your dog, or get a writing coach. Just do something to get this thing out into the open where you can, you know, put some water in it and see the holes. Okay. This was good. I hope this was really useful for everyone. Have you guys read anything lately that is worthy of note? Jenny, have you read anything worthy of note lately?
Have I read anything worthy of note? I've read many things. Are they worthy of note?
Okay, I will, while you think about it, I've been killing it on the Mistborn series, which is the series that Brandon Sanderson is, I think, he calls it his calling card, and I can see why. It is akin, is genuinely, in the realm of fantasy, it is akin to The Lord of the Rings, and I think that a lot of people who are out there reading A Court of Thorn and Roses, or the Rebecca Yarros Fire and Iron, I don't remember the name of it. Any of those, you really, I think those people often feel like, well, I only like this kind of fantasy. Like, I only like the things that are really trendy, and maybe they have a more feminine approach because the authors are women. The Mistborn series has a female protagonist as well as male protagonists, and as well as sort of people who are not necessarily the gender of the creature is not important. And it is so stupendously well done, y'all, that there is a reason why Brendan Sanderson got the most money on Kickstarter ever to write a bunch more books. And that is sort of part of why I went and was like, what is he most well known for? Let me see it. So anyway, highly recommend at least the first two books and the first 50 pages of the third book of the Mistborn series, because I have not finished it. But I mean, dude's on like book number 40 something at this point. I got faith that this is gonna nail the landing. So that's what I got. I also read another romance too, because I was like, I need to go and read romances. I need to go and read things that are all about the couple. So I read Tessa Bailey's Wreck the Halls, which is a hysterical premise. It's two children of a broken up famous duo of women rock stars trying to get them back together for a reunion. And it is basically a very simple story, super emotionally charged, and a lot of sex. And, you know, it is very enjoyable, but it is so fun. I mean, there's a plot. Like, that external thing is it's a thing, and it's a driver, and it's big, and it's happening, and there's a reality TV show, and it's all really fun. But their connection and their emotion is at the core of it, so it's a good thing to read, and I now have, like, a whole stack of other sort of people who really know what they're doing in rom-com, because I've already read almost all of Serena's books, so I can't just rely on that. Sorry.
Well, and when you find a romance where the person has blended the internal and external conflicts really well, it's, you know, then you're like, ah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I am reading The Intern by Michelle Campbell, which is a novel of suspense about a law student and a judge. And I had noted that it was something I wanted to read. And then I was talking to one of my favorite narrators, Sarah Malo Christensen. And she said, we were talking about thrillers. And I said, oh, I like this thing over here. And she said, oh, wait, try The Intern. I narrated it and I thought it was just great and really character driven. So I'm enjoying it very much.
Well, I will share a book. This doesn't happen very often, but I decided I was not going to read a book after a few chapters, that I didn't like it. It wasn't for me. And it's the Rick Rubin book, The Creative Act, which has been on the bestseller list and sat there for many, many, many moons now.
Can we just pause and say that I did the same thing, and then I started to give it away, and then I kept it because so many people have loved it, and somebody said it was the first third that was kind of, and so I kept it, but I haven't gotten back into it. So anyway, just timing out to say, yeah, I agree, and I might give it another chance. It is still sitting here. It is not in my little free library. Denizens of my little free library. Sorry, it might show up later. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast with Debbie Millman on Design Matters is her podcast. She's brilliant, and she interviewed Rick Rubin, and I was like, this guy is great, and the things he's talking about are great. Why did I dismiss his book? I'm going to go back and give it another try. And I am really happy that I did. So that is an interesting experience that doesn't happen very often, but the book is pretty profound. And that podcast with Debbie Millman is really worth listening to.
Wow. So I time outed you just so that you could then say, well, that's what I'm doing. I'm going back to it. So yeah, I still have it. I guess I should go back to it.
I just looked it up, you know, because of course, if you guys tell me it's interesting, then I need to know. And I'm just curious what the cover is supposed to be, because I see a boob.
Oh, it's really interesting that you should say that, because they have this conversation actually on the podcast. And some people do see that. Some people see a target. Some people see an eye. I think it was meant to be people see different things. Or a universe, okay. Maybe. I'll have to go back and see, because they had this exact conversation. The cover's, yeah, strange. I agree. I think it's strange. But yeah, it's just interesting when a book is doing so well and you didn't like it. It's you know, you sometimes think, what did I miss? And maybe you just didn't like it. But anyway, that's the book.
Well, it's one of those, like, lots of white space. Here is a chunk of advice, lots of white space. Here is a cliche put into my words, lots of which is, you know, the classic Stephen Pressman, the art of war, the war of art method. And oh, and I like the war of art, but, you know, some part of me is often like, you know, there are only some people who can get away with this much white space. And I think we all know what they look like. And he has one of them. So, but yeah, so many people that I really respect have actually said what you said, which is, well, it is a lot of white space and then cliche expressed differently, but also there are these nuggets. So I feel like I should go back in and look for the nuggets. And then I will share it, Serena, so you do not have to. It is an expensive hardback, not going to lie.
Yeah.
Alrighty, I'm looking forward to it.
I felt a little resentful about that particular purchase, which made me kind of wonder. I mean, it's a good gift book. I don't know. You always wonder if people are really reading the thing, but you really read it. So
I'm working on it.
Okay, All right. Well, I will work on it too. We will resume. We will discuss. Okay. This was great. As always, you can find all of Serena's books and the ways to follow her and all of the other things at serenabowen.com. Jenny Nash is best pursued. Where would you say, Jenny?
I have a new Substack at jennynash.substack.com that's been really fun, and I would love for you to follow me there.
I also have a Substack. It is called Am Reading. It is free. It is fun. It is all my book recs. It definitely has included the Mistborn trilogy multiple times, although not Wreck the Halls yet. And the best place to follow me is also Instagram. But what you should really do for all of us is just, you know, go buy a book that we wrote, because that is a great way of showing your support. And you should absolutely follow the podcast in the show notes, which can be found at amwritingpodcast.com. Sometimes we send out things that are only in the show notes, so you'll only get those that way. And if you want to throw in some financial support, you can do that in that same space. We are appreciative, but the podcast will remain free. That's it. All right. I'm going to take us out. Until next week, kids, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause.